Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos Yud Ches. We are on Yud Zayin Amud Beis with the Mishnah. Up until this point in time, the Masechta has been first and foremost discussing the Malach of Hotzah. From the first daf of our Masechta and daf Beis up until daf Tes, so it was one Mishnah, but the Gemara's exploration of the Malach of Hotzah. Subsequently, the Mishnah on daf Tes Amud Beis talked about afternoon activities that are prohibited. But the Mishnah and Daf Tes really wasn't focusing on Friday afternoon, but really was talking about Stam, a regular afternoon, in which Mincha becomes the consideration. The Mishnah and Yud Aleph started talking about Friday afternoon. Mishnah mentioned a couple of enactments that were made on Friday afternoon, so that you don't come and violate the Malach of Hotzah. The craftsman cannot go with various tools. And so as a result of that, for fear of the fact that they may end up carrying these tools on Shabbos. The Mishnah also mentioned not delousing your garments on Friday night by the candlelight and not reading by the candlelight on Friday night. And that launched the Gemara into a discussion of the Yud Ches Dover, of the 18 enactments that were made by Beit Shammai. And then we're up to speed. Meaning, so since the beginning of the Masechta now, it's 17 Blad Gemara that has been in the books, and we have been focusing on many topics relating to Shabbos, but here in this Mishnah now, we're going to really formally begin discussing the do's and don'ts of Shabbos, specifically on Friday afternoon. Truth of the matter is, the Mishnah previously talking about what you're not allowed to carry already started the discussion, but here the Mishnah begins. Beit Shammai Omrim Ein Sharon Diyo V'Simanim V'Karshinim. So more debates that take place between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, but over here, we're going to go now back to form in which the halacha is going to be following Beit Hillel. There are four debates, really five, five. Five debates that take place in this Mishnah of activities that one is not allowed to do before Shabbos. Beit Shammai says that you're not allowed to soak either ink or spices or karshinim, probably animal fodder. The only way you're allowed to do so is only if it is soaked before Shabbos, but the soaking it right before Shabbos so that it continues to soak through Shabbos. So Beit Shammai says one is not allowed to do that, and Beit Hillel would say that it's fine. What is the basis of the position of Beit Shammai? So that we're going to wait until we get to the Gemara. Number two, Beit Shammai Omer Mei Nosnin Onin Shel Pishtan Lesocha Tanur Ela Kedei She'Yavilu Miba Oyom. One is not allowed to take flax and put it into the oven. Now, the purpose of doing so, Rashi explains, is so that it would whiten the flax. And the only way one is allowed to do that is only if it's miba'o yom, only if there's plenty of time on Friday for the whitening to occur. But one is not allowed to do that, according to Beit Shammai, right before Shabbos, where the whitening is going to continue through Shabbos. V'lo satemer liyoren, the same thing when it comes to wool, putting it into a pot. And you're doing so in order to dye the wool, and you can only do that, says Beit Shammai, if there's time enough on Friday afternoon, so that the task will be completed on Friday afternoon. And once again, Beit Hillel says it's mutter. As long as you started the process before Shabbos, that would be mutter. Beit Shammai Omrim Ein Porsin Mitzudos Chayva Ofos V'Dagim Ela Kedei She'Yitz'odu Miba'od Yom. Beit Shammai says that a trap can only be laid out on Friday afternoon, only if it has time to trap on Friday afternoon. But if you lay the trap right before Shabbos, where you know the trap is going to be affected on Shabbos, Beit Shammai says you cannot do that. Beit Hillel matir, and Beit Hillel says that it would be mutter. Beit Shammai omer mein mochrin lenachri ve'in to'anim imo ve'in magbin alav ela kedei she'yagia lamakom karov. Beit Shammai is of the opinion that no transaction can be made with a non-Jew. You cannot help him load the product onto his animal, and you can't lift it together with him unless you know that the item that you sold him is going to make it back to his home prior to Shabbos. Beit Hillel Matir, and Beit Hillel says that, look, as long as the transaction occurred before Shabbos, the fact that he's going to be carrying it on Shabbos is no concern of yours. Beit Shammai Omer Mei Nosnin Oros La'avdam V'lo Kelim L'Koves Nachri Ela Kedei She'Yaseh Miba'od Yom. Beit Shammai is of the opinion that you cannot give leather to a tanner and not your clothing to a launderer, to a non-Jewish launderer, unless he has the ability to wash them before Shabbos. Uvekulam beisol matir, and in all these cases, beisol is going to be matir im hashemesh. As long as you do these actions before Shabbos, and then you have nothing to do with these actions after Shabbos has begun, so beisol is going to be lenient in these positions. I'm Rav Shimon Gamliel, and just finishing up in the Mishnah, Rav Shimon Gamliel says the following: No again, how you base abash are you? And nostin kli lavan lekobes nachri shloshi yamim kodem l'shabbos. That it used to be the custom of my father that when it came to giving the whites to the launderer in order to clean, so he would do so only but 3 days before Shabbos. Meaning, he took it upon himself to be machmir like the position of Beis Shammai and not the position of Beis Hillel. Vishavan elav elu shaton in korban Beis Abad v'igule hagas. And they both are in agreement that one is allowed to put a beam on the Beis Abad and the Igule Hagas, on the wine press and on the olive press. Okay. Obviously, there is a much to discuss here in this Mishnah. The Mishnah went over five different scenarios. Let's just, if we can organize this Mishnah first and take the five scenarios and point out that the first three scenarios are really a discussion of malachas. And basically, the first three scenarios of the Mishnah, the question is essentially, can these actions be performed before Shabbos? As long as you have nothing to do with it once Shabbos has begun, can the actions perpetuate through Shabbos? And in all three of those scenarios, Beis Shammai takes the same position, which is no, meaning the activity must be concluded before Shabbos, even though your part, your role in the activity only is at the beginning. Still, the entire activity must be completed before Shabbos. Why that is, as I pointed out, we're going to get to when we get to the Gemara. And in all those circumstances, Beis Hillel is matir. He allows it, meaning as long as your role only is in the beginning, even though it's going to continue through Shabbos, but this is for you not going to be considered Chilul Shabbos. You didn't do anything on Shabbos itself per se, and so therefore it is not going to be a concern. The fourth scenario of the Mishnah is really a discussion of what we would call a mir lanachri. Now, not exactly. In other words, you're not asking a non-Jew to do something for you. But the consideration over here in this fourth case of the Mishnah has to do with the fact that you are making a transaction with them before Shabbos, and there's still going to be some remnant of that transaction as Shabbos begins, meaning he's carrying it home with him as Shabbos begins. And over here, Tosfos points out, you could see Tosfos on Yuzayin Amud Beis. It's the second to last Tosfos on the Amud. Ein mochir lanachri, afagav di'avid lehu b'shabbos l'mechayiv chatos. So Tosfos points out, let's just for a moment, let's talk about this fourth scenario of the Mishnah, where let's say he goes and does in fact go home with it and it goes into Shabbos. Even if that were to be the case, what would you be violating? So as opposed to the first three cases of the Mishnah, where if you would have played a role in these activities on Shabbos, that would all be a malacha. Now in the Mishnah, by the way, I didn't articulate which malachas we're talking about. Some of them are pretty self-evident. As we go through the Gemara, we're going to treat each one of them independently, and I'm going to explain better what the malachas are for each one. But still, in the first three, we're talking about violating an actual malacha. Over here, when I sell something to a non-Jew before Shabbos, and then he brings it home with him, even if he does so on Shabbos, what did you do? Nothing. In other words, it's not even your item anymore. So Tosfos notes this, and mikomakom yachash anachri mechamer oseh b'Shabbos bi'adam davar sheyisrael aser min haTorah gazur rabbanan im chashecha ki depirsh bekunshus mishum de michlif b'shlucha. So over here, even though we're not talking about Issur d'oraisa, but still, according to Beis Shammai, the concern is that if he walks home with it during Shabbos, so then even though the item is totally his, it's not yours, nevertheless, it'll be confused with the fact that he really is just acting as an agent of yours, meaning shlichus. Ava b'hanach dvarim d'reisha, she'ino osa b'Shabbos isri yadayim, but Tosfos notes that in the first three activities mentioned in our Mishnah, so once everything is set, what is the remainder of the activities? They're all passive. And if you look back at the first three cases of the Mishnah, so Tosfos is making a very sharp point, which is that the first three activities of the Mishnah are all passive activities after it was set into motion. So lo gazru ilav de mechayv chatas. So Tosus points out, and that's why the first three have to be specifically isurei de araisa. Because if they were not isurei de araisa, so then just simply a passive activity where you had no role in it, and we're not talking about isurei de araisa, the chachamim would not have made such a gzera. Behind the time of the in nosin oros la'avdan. Okay. And Tosus points out, and the same thing in terms of giving hides to the tanner. Meaning over there, we're talking about that's something which obviously is an action that's working the hides. And again, you gave it to the non-Jew, and the Tosus points out, it's the same thing over there, where it has to be something which is active because it's that's talking about shlichus when it comes to a non-Jew. Okay, so when we look at the Mishnah, activities that cannot be done before Shabbos, according to Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, in all these cases are matir. I'll put in an interesting parenthetical note before we start with the Gemara, and that is that Beis Hillel, one of the things that Beis Hillel is matir, in fact, it's the fifth item in the Mishnah, that Beis Hillel is matir, is that one is allowed to give leather to the tanner, to the non-Jewish tanner, right before Shabbos, and you can give your clothing to a launder right before Shabbos. What about other kablanas? What about other acts which are contractual? In other words, you're hiring somebody not by the hour, but by the job. And so our other activities would be okay. And so Tosfos on the bottom of the Yud Zayin Amud Beis, so he quotes the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam's opinion is expressed a number of times throughout Shas. It's over here. It's in the Gemara Avodah Zarah. So Rabbi Natan is of the opinion that one would be allowed to hire a contractor over the course of Shabbos to work on Shabbos, obviously, a non-Jewish contractor to work on Shabbos, even to build your house. This position of Rabbi Natan is very controversial, but nevertheless, Rabbi Natan cites our Mishnah as being proof and evidence that this is in fact the case, and one would be allowed to do so. Obviously, to hire a non-Jewish worker to be paid on an hourly basis over Shabbos, so he clearly is doing something for you where he's earning on Shabbos. But if it's a contract and he can do it whenever he wants, and he happens to be working on Shabbos, so Rabbeinu Tam is matir. If and as I pointed out, this position Rabbeinu Tam is open to a lot of controversy. If you want just one more interesting note on this, take a look at the end of this particular Tosfos, which continues to the top of Yud Ches Amud Aleph. And he writes, "V'Rabbeinu Tam Nami Kishabanas Beis Olo Samach Al Chivaso V'Lo Ratz Al Hatir." When Rabbeinu Tam built his own home, he didn't rely on his own heter, and he did not allow the non-Jewish workers to work and build a house for him on Shabbos, even though it was not by hour, it was contract labor. Nevertheless, he didn't allow to do so, even though he himself felt that it was mutter. So you can see already, even within Rabbeinu Tam, that this position is something that he himself felt comfortable paskening, but didn't felt comfortable lemaisa. Okay. We start with the Gemara in Yud Ches Amud Aleph, and now we're going to go over each one of the cases in the Mishnah independently and speak out what exactly the malacha is that we're describing. In the first case of the Mishnah, we were talking about soaking ink and spices and animal fodder, and you're doing so right before Shabbos. And so the question first and foremost is, what malacha are we talking about? Now, you started the action before Shabbos. And according to Beis Hillel, as long as you started before Shabbos, that's fine. But what action, what malacha are we talking about? So it will be clear from the Gemara's discussion right now whether they're talking about the malacha of lush, kneading with a K. And that means to say that one on Shabbos, one of the 39 malachas on Shabbos, is that one is not allowed to take water and flour and knead them together. And as we're going to see, the act of kneading is basically whenever you take any particles and bind them together with a liquid, so that is going to be a tolada, a subcategory of the malacha of kneading. And so presumably in the Mishnah over here, we're talking about kneading. Now, probably you're wondering, but you're not actually kneading it with your hands. All you're doing is just simply soaking it together. Is that also going to be part of the malacha of kneading? And that's where the Gemara starts the discussion. So who's of the opinion that just simply putting the water into the dio? Dio is, I'm not describing it well. I'm calling it ink. There must be some sort of particles, some sort of solid particles which get bound together when put with the water. So zui shriyasam. So that is considered already the act of lisha. I'm Rav Yosef Rebbe. So Rav Yosef says that is the opinion of Rebbe. Detanya will enter a brisa echanosin as a kemach veechanosin as a mayim ha'achron chayev. So over here we're looking at a really simple activity. One person puts in the flour. The second person puts in the water. The second person violated the malacha of lisha. Even though he didn't put his hands in and actually knead it together, nevertheless, he violated the malacha of lisha, divrei Rebbe. And that's Rebbe's position. And Rebbe Yossi Omer, Einu chayev ad shigabel. And Rebbe Yossi is of the opinion that one is not going to be chayev until he actually kneads it with his hands. Just simply putting them together in of itself is not the malacha of lisha. You actually have to knead it with your hands. And so our Mishnah seems to be subscribing to the position of Rebbe. Amalei Abai v'demad kanal kamer Rebbe Yossi ala v'kemach debar gibel, who could very well be that Rebbe Yossi's position is specific to flour, because that's something which is generally needed. Aval diodala bar gibel hu a malachav, but maybe when it comes to diel, where normally the process itself doesn't demand kneading, the process is just simply soaking them together. So maybe Rebbe Yossi would agree that over here, the mere act of soaking would constitute lisha. Lo sakadacha, the Gemara says, no, you don't have. We're not going to say that. Detanya, because we learned in a brisa, echanosin esa efer, vechanosin esa mayim, hachron chayim. Divrei Rebbe, Rebbe Yossi, Rebbe Yehuda, Omer, ad shigabel. It's the identical semachlokus, but over here the materials are water and ashes. Now, ashes is not something that's typically kneaded together with water. However, if you take water and ashes and you mix the two together, so it creates now a binding of the ashes together. In other words, it's a form of kneading. And we see over here that there still is a debate between Rebbe and Rebbe Yossi. In this price, it happens to be Rebbe Yehuda, Rebbe Yossi and Rebbe Yehuda, but probably the previous price also was Rebbe Yossi and Rebbe Yehuda. But anyway, it's the same achlokus, and it's on ashes. So you see over here, even though ashes are not something which are normally kneaded together, but it's the same achlokus, so we are now saying that Rebbe Yosef is right. Our Mishnah is in fact going like the opinion of Rebbe. V'dilma mai efer afar, debar gibelhu. The Gemara suggests, well, maybe the Braisa is talking, even though it uses the word efer with an aleph, it could be referring to afar dirt. And dirt and water, to make a composition of mud, so that's something that's typically done. And it's done by typically kneading it with your hands. And meanwhile, over here, they're still debating. So it's possible to say that. Va'atanya efer, va'atanya afar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I have two different brisas. One brisa clearly referring to the efer of ashes. Another brisa talking about dirt. And what the Gemara is trying to argue right now is that if the two brisas were referring to the same thing, it'd be using the same word. So the Gemara says that is not a compelling argument. Midi gabi hadadi tanya. Those are brisas, and as we have learned time and again, brisas have not one authorship, has multiple authorships. A series of brisas is put together by Rabbi Chia. Another series of brisas is put together by Rabbi Oshia. And so just because you're citing two different brisas doesn't mean that we're able to match them together, because it could just simply be two different authorships. And so therefore we could still argue that when the brisa said the word afer, it really meant offer. Either there's another brisa that actually uses the word offer, yeah, but that other brisa could just simply be based on some other author of that brisa. Anyway, so the Gemara is slightly inconclusive on this matter in terms of whether or not our Mishnah is specifically the position of Rebbe, or our Mishnah could in fact conform to the position of Rebbe Yosef and Rebbe Yehuda. We move on to the second case of the Mishnah, Tana Rabbanan. Tana Rabbanan. Poskim ein legina, Erev Shabbos im chashecha, mitmaleit v'oleches kol yom kulo. In this brisa, once again, we're talking about starting an activity before Shabbos, having the activity continue through Shabbos. The first case in this brisa is basically watering the lawn, a sprinkler. So one is allowed to start, open up the water before Shabbos, and allow the water to continue running onto the field through Shabbos. And umenichin mugmar tachas hakelim, umitgamrim v'ochim kol hayom kulo. Secondly, one is allowed to start the mugmar. The mugmar is basically some sort of deodorizer, where they would burn some sort of fragrance under the clothing, and the fragrance would go into the clothing. The process involved the lighting up of the mugmar of these spices. So that, the first malacha obviously is zoreya, it's planting. In other words, you're watering the field. This malacha over here involves havara, because you are burning the spices, and you're doing so under the clothing. Now you started the process before Shabbos, and it continues through Shabbos. And v'hochin kol yom kulo. And this brisa is saying that that is fine. And number three, umanichin gafris tachas akelim. One is allowed to put sulfur underneath the clothing. Umit gafrim v'hochin kol Shabbos kulo. Now this process of burning sulfur under clothing—it's not clothing. Sorry, it's the same word. It's kelim, but it's not clothing. It's basically utensils. And this process is basically putting the finishing touch on the vessel. Vessel's made up of silver. And for some reason, I'm not a smith, I don't understand why, but they would burn sulfur underneath as part of the finishing touch. As long as you started the burning process before Shabbos, even though it continues through Shabbos, so the Braisa says that's fine. Number four, the fourth case of this Braisa, Menichin Kilur Agabe Ayin, V'Aispal Nis Agabe Maka. One is allowed to put some sort of ointment under your eye on Friday afternoon. Have that action continue through Shabbos. Similarly, one is allowed to put some sort of bandage. Now, the bandage over here, I'm guessing, has some sort, it's not just simply a wrap, but it also has some sort of therapeutic aid. Maybe it's got some ointment on the bandage. Anyway, one is allowed to put it on before Shabbos. Umitzrapes va'olechas kol hayom kulo. And it's going to continue to heal you over the course of Shabbos. So, this price over here seemingly is a ringing endorsement of the opinion of Beis Hillel. As long as you start these activities before Shabbos, these activities can continue through Shabbos. Aval ein nosin chitin lasoch harichayim shalmayim, ela bichdei sheyitchenu b'me'od yom. However, what you cannot do is you cannot put wheat in the millstone. This millstone is powered by water. So, old engineering, but old and good. And so it is a water-powered millstone, and you put in the wheat before Shabbos, and the grinding occurs over Shabbos, and here the Braisa now makes a left-hand turn. And the Braisa says that one is not allowed to do that right before Shabbos. The only way you can do it is only if there's sufficient time before Shabbos has begun, so that the whole action is going to finish before Shabbos. Okay. And so this Braisa requires obviously clarification. Because in this Braisa, in the first four cases, it sounded like we're going along the path of Beis Hillel, where activities can be done before Shabbos, even though those activities will continue through Shabbos, but as long as you don't play a role in those activities over Shabbos, they would be mutter. But then the Braisa at the end, talking about the water-powered millstone, says that one is not allowed to put wheat in this millstone unless the entire process is going to be completed before Shabbos. That sounds like Beis Shammai. But it's all one braisa. So we will be spending a good amount of time today's daf trying to identify authorship of this braisa and trying to gain understanding of the braisa. My taima. So what is going on over here in this braisa? Specifically with this last case over here. Amar Rabba Mimnesha Mashmas Kol. So Rabba's approach is a very simple one, and that is that the braisa is fundamentally the opinion of Beis Hillel. And all these cases in the braisa would be allowed. Notable exception for the millstone. Why? Because the millstone produces a lot of noise. And even though you're not doing a malach on Shabbos, and even though you started the activity before Shabbos, but nevertheless, as the milling continues over the course of Shabbos, it's going to produce a lot of noise. And so what? Rashi writes over here, I'm reading the Rashi inside, sheyitchenu b'me'od yom, mipnei she'mashmas es hakol, ve'av she'milsha milsa b'Shabbos. And what it is it produces a loud sound on Shabbos. It becomes very public on Shabbos. V'ika zilusa. And by doing so, it is a degradation of Shabbos. It's not showing proper respect to Shabbos. Even though technically, you of course did not do the malacha on Shabbos, and you started the process before Shabbos, but nevertheless, by you doing something before Shabbos, that's just simply going to make a lot of noise over Shabbos as well. So this is a concept of av shamilsa, and that's why the Chachamim prohibited it. And so according to Rabbah, the entire Braisa is the opinion of Beis Hillel. And the last case of the Braisa is introducing us to the idea of Avshamilsa. Amalei Rav Yosef, Alei Mamar Mishum Shvisas Kalim. Now Rav Yosef says, you know, there's another way to explain this Braisa, and that is the position of Shvisas Kalim. Now over here, the Gemara Rav Yosef is going to take an interesting approach, in that he too is going to agree that the author of this Braisa is Beis Hillel. And as Rashi over here points out, it's uncomfortable for a Gemara it's uncomfortable for Amoraim to explain an anonymous Braisa that it's going like the position of Beis Shammai. It's just simply uncomfortable. So let's continue and suggest that the author of this brisa is in fact Beis Hillel. And Beis Hillel subscribes to the idea of Shvisas Kelim, that your utensils have to rest. And now we're going to open up a topic of discussion in the Gemara right now. And let's give just a brief introduction. On Shabbos, obviously, the Torah tells us that we need to rest on Shabbos. We have to have a cessation of malacha on Shabbos. The Torah says not only by us, but our entire family. And not only that, says the Torah, but even if we have an eved shivcha, even if it's a slave, a male or female, they too have to stop doing malacha. Further continues the Torah, even our animals have to stop doing malacha on Shabbos. The shorcha, chamorcha, right? Our animals also cannot do malacha on Shabbos. Just a parenthetical note, later in the Masechta, I forgot which daf it is, but it's coming up, there will be a Tosfos where he discusses if your animal wants to eat on Shabbos, and your animal now is pulling out grass on Shabbos in order to eat. So do you have to stop your animal from doing so? Intuitively, we all know the answer. No, you don't have to stop your animal from doing so. But if your animal is a Shomer Shabbos, your animal shouldn't be pulling grass out of the ground in order to eat. But obviously, it's allowed. So Tosfos later in the Masechta is going to address that. But we all know the conclusion. That of course is allowed. But anyway, back to our discussion. So what has to stop from doing malacha on Shabbos? You, your family, your avadim, your animals, and what about your kelim? What about your utensils? Is there a mitzvah that you're not only you and your family and even your animals that cannot do malacha? But does it even go to the point of your kelim? Now, the Torah doesn't explicitly make this point. The Torah does explicitly talk about all the aforementioned. Family, avadim, animals. But the Torah doesn't mention it about kelim. Do your kelim have to be Shomer Shabbos? Now, I know the Gemara is going to discuss it, but if we could just for a moment stop in the Gemara and just think about it for a second. What would Shabbos look like if not only you were Shabbos, but your kelim were Shabbos as well? That'd be a very difficult Shabbos. Because that means that not only can you not cook, not only can your family not cook, not only can your avadim not cook, I'll say it, although it's a silly sentence, your animals can't cook, but your pot itself also can't cook. Now, if your pot can't cook, that means that the food has to be fully cooked before Shabbos. Because you can't just simply put up a chulent right before Shabbos, because then your pot would be cooking on Shabbos. Let me put this another way. How would you be able to light candles going into Shabbos? The second parak over here is going to detail the mitzvah of lighting licht right before Shabbos. It's a mitzvah. But if your kelim can't do malacha, so your lamp right now is the base for the malacha of Havara. And how is that going to work? So just starting us to think along the lines of, what does it mean that your kelim can't do malacha? But right now, the Gemara is going to entertain this idea, and the Gemara now is going to suggest that the author of the Braisa is Beis Hillel. And as far as Beis Hillel is concerned, he's going to say that your kelim cannot do malacha. D'tanya, the Gemara quotes a Braisa. But we're back to the Gemara. Uvechol asher amarti alechem tishameiru. The Torah says, uvechol, and that obviously is a term that's inclusive. And l'rabba shvisas kelim. And the Torah, by saying the word kol, is coming to include even your kelim as well. And so this is what the Gemara is at this point in time suggesting. That our Mishnah is going like the opinion of Beis Hillel, and it is prohibiting all these activities because your kelim would be doing malacha. So, Ela am Rav Yosef Mishum Shvisas Kelim. Rav Yosef says that's pshat in our Mishnah. It's talking about Shvisas Kelim. Damar v'hashad damar le-Beis Hillel isu Shvisas Kelim daraisa. So the Gemara says, okay, let's assume right now that this would be okay, that Beis Hillel subscribes to the idea of Shvisas Kelim. Now, when you go back to our Mishnah, in our Mishnah, there doesn't seem to be any evidence that Beis Hillel subscribes to this idea, that he subscribes to Shvisas Kelim. In a moment, I'm going to touch on that, but right now, just working within the Braisa of that we saw above on this Amud, with the four cases. So the Gemara says, so how can he allow so many of these cases over here? So the Gemara says, Mishum Deloka Avin Maisa. These cases over here don't involve an actual action. Meaning, in all the action, all the activities of the Braisa, they don't involve something that actively happens, they're all passive. Look back in the cases of the Braisa, the water flowing onto the ground. The Gemara describes that as something which is passive. Burning of the incense of the spices to go into your clothing. Again, that is a passive action. The sulfur, again, the Gemara views this as a passive action. The kilur, the ointment. So it's just simply on you, and it's just remaining on you, as opposed to the millstone where you're actually grinding the millstone. So what the Gemara now is suggesting is that the difference between the difference between the cases of the Braisa, between the first four which are allowed and the last case which is disallowed, is that Beis Hillel, this is all the opinion of Rav Yosef, Beis Hillel does subscribe to Shvisas Kalim, but the distinction to be made between passive activities and active activities. And as far as Beis Shammai is concerned, meaning now let's reintroduce ourselves to the opinion of Beis Shammai, Beis Shammai would be of the opinion that even in passive activities, Shvisas Kalim would be Aser. What I just said, by the way, was Rashi. You can see Rashi towards the bottom of the Amud, second wide line down, Lo Kavit Kli Shum Maisa, Ela Munach Ha'art Vehin Besocha, Aval Erechaim Avdi Maisa, Ule Beis Shammai, Kevin Du Munach Megava, Hainu Maisi Delay. Okay, and Beis Shammai would say that even though it's Munach, it's considered a Maisa. I'm sorry, I didn't represent Rashi so perfectly. It's not that according to Beis Shammai, these are considered passive, but vis-a-vis the definition of active, this is active enough. Okay. But in any respect, this is what the Gemara now is proposing. So the Gemara says, all right, Onan Shel Pishta, my time is Sharu. So the Gemara says, so if this is true, so now let's go back to some of the cases that we saw previously. What about the flax? So, Mishum Delo Aben Maisa, Umenich Naichi. So the Gemara says, because that wasn't an activity. Again, right now we're suggesting that Beis Hillel does subscribe to Shvisas Kalim, but only when the activity is done actively, not passively. So the flax being put into the oven, that was passive. The Gemara says, Mitzudas Chayva Ofa Dagim, Da'avin Maisa. What about the trap? The trap that you set out, presumably what's going to happen is that the animal is going to step in the trap, and the trap is going to actively trap the animal. And so the Gemara now is suggesting, if that's true, so the answer falls apart. So the Gemara says, my time is Sharu, Hasanami Kal Belechi, Vikukari, Delokavid Maise. The Gemara says, yeah, but you're thinking about the wrong kind of trap. The traps in the Mishnah are traps that are passive. For example, says Rashi, let's say we're talking about hooks, or we're talking about nets that were already laid out. Or let's say, for example, the Kukari Rashi describes as being some sort of cylinder, narrow on one side, wider on the other side. The animal goes in, but the animal cannot come out. So these traps over here don't do anything actively to trap the animal, just simply by the way they're engineered and designed, they trap the animals without having to make any kind of action. Okay, so the Gemara right now is entertaining this idea that Beis Hillel subscribes to Shvisas Kalim. It just happens to be that the only Shvisas Kalim that would be prohibited are only when your Kalim are actively doing something. But if your Kalim are passively involved, even Beis Hillel would say that that's mutter. Okay. The Hashta, the Amar of Oshia, Amar of Asi. But the Gemara points out, but this approach of Rav Yosef is not an accepted approach. Because Rav Oshia says in the name of Rav Asi, Mantana Shvisas Kelem Daraisa, who subscribes to this idea? Beit Shammai hi, velo Beis Hillel. So it's only the opinion of Beit Shammai, and it's not the opinion of Beis Hillel. Ula Beit Shammai, bein kavin maisa, bein delo kavin maisa, asur. And according to Beit Shammai, it is a blanket position that whether or not your kalim are doing something actively or even not, Beis Shammai is of the opinion that your utensils must rest on Shabbos. Ule Beis Hillel apagav dekavin maisei shari. And Beis Hillel is also a fundamental position, meaning Beis Hillel totally allows for your kalim to do malach on Shabbos, both passively and actively. So the Gemara now has rejected the position of Rav Yosef and adopted a very fundamental understanding of the machlokas, that Beis Shammai subscribes to Shvisas Kalim, period, whether it's an active or a passive malacha, and Beis Hillel does not subscribe to Shvisas Kalim, period. Okay. And so with that stated, so we go back to the Mishnah, so then the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel now become self-evident. The first three cases of the Mishnah, which have to do with your Kalim doing malacha on Shabbos, so very good. Each of the positions, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, will just simply divide based on party lines. Beis Shammai does subscribe to Shvisas Kalim, and therefore all those activities are prohibited. Beis Hillel allows all these activities. Meaning you started the Kalim in motion before Shabbos. The only thing now left is that your Kalim are doing Malach on Shabbos. That would be fine. And in the case of the Braisa that we learned on our Amud, so same thing. All these activities would be allowed by Beis Hillel. They would all be prohibited by Beis Shammai. So, the Gemara now has to go and revisit the question that we've been spending now some time with, and that is authorship of the Braisa, meaning the Braisa that began in the middle of our Amud, so allows for activities and disallows the activity of the millstone. Now, the Gemara says that according to this approach of Rav Asi, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are divided fundamentally. If that's true, so who now is the author of the Braisa? Well, if it's Beis Hillel, we're going to be stuck with the case of the millstone. Now, I know earlier the Gemara suggested Afsha Milsa, but for now, let us just for a moment separate ourselves from that idea of Afsha Milsa. So we said previously that the author of the Braisa is Beis Hillel, and the last case is a consideration of Afsha Milsa. The Gemara now is turning to a new approach, which is maybe not. Maybe the author of the Braisa is going to be Beis Shammai. And so the millstone case now is readily understood, because that is now your Kalim, which is doing Malacha on Shabbos. But then, of course, it leaves a lot of explanation to do. What about the first four cases? V'hashad amar l'Beis Shammai, and that's where we continue now in the Gemara, as we are on the bottom of Yud Ches Amud Aleph. V'hashad amar l'Beis Shammai apag abdolav in Maisa Aser ihachi. So now that we're saying that Beis Shammai's position is that your Kalim cannot do any Malacha, neither active nor passive. So go back to the Braisa, explain to me the cases of the Braisa. Mugmar v'gafris maitam ishar Beis Shammai hasam anacha ara. So the Gemara says very simple. In the case of both the Mugmar and the Gafris, so we assumed that where were they being burned? In a utensil, in one of your utensils. That's not the case. Where they were being burned was on the ground. And so therefore, you made a little recess in the ground. You put the spices, you put the sulfur in the ground, and it was burning in the ground. So now, nobody's doing malacha. You're not doing the malacha. You started before Shabbos. Your kalim are not doing a malacha because it's not in a kli. And that's why Beis Shammai would allow it in that braisa. So, gigis, viner, vikadera, ushpud, maitam, ashar, Beis Shammai. So the Gemara says, okay. So that did a wonderful job explaining the braisa. But the Gemara says, but there's still, we have a lot of explaining to do within the shita of Beis Shammai. For example, gigis. Gigis, Rashi explains, is beer production. So beer production, you can't just simply pour the beer into the ground. The beer has to be collected in a utensil in order to make it. Now, in terms of the making of beer, what malacha does it violate? I'm going to be honest, I'm not sure. So but the Gemara is assuming that it does violate a malacha. And Rashi says making beer is a lengthy process. It takes at least 8 days, says Rashi. And obviously to make beer, so your kalim are going to be producing the beer through a Shabbos. You can't go 8 consecutive days without hitting a Shabbos. And then the second question is, how do you light candles on Friday night? And you can't light them on the ground. They're being held in a lamp, and that's your keli doing a malacha. Ukedera, and how's your pot cooking food going into Shabbos? Ushpud, or let's say you put some meat on the spit and have it roasting, and it continues to roast through Shabbos. And how would Beis Shammai allow all these activities? Let me emphasize. The Gemara's question over here is for Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel does not subscribe to this idea of Shvisas Kalim. And the Gemara's accepted approach, Beis Hillel doesn't subscribe to Shvisas Kalim. And so therefore for Beis Hillel, the question doesn't even get off the ground. But within now this new understanding of Beis Shammai, where he subscribes to Shvisas Kalim, both actively and passively, so how do we light licht before Shabbos? How do we put food that's not fully cooked into a pot before Shabbos, which, as we're going to be discussing over the course of our Masechta, there are allowances over there. So how does all that happen? And the Gemara gives an answer, and a really interesting one, and it's really the only answer you can give in defense of Beis Shammai, demafker luafkure. So the Gemara says that before Shabbos, so what you must do is you must be mafker, you have to disown the kalim that are going to be doing malachas over Shabbos. And so therefore the lamp, you're mafker. You just simply say that I no longer am the owner of this lamp prior to Shabbos. And you're going to say that regarding all the other kelim that are going to be doing malacha over the course of Shabbos. And once you disown them, so then you're not violating the Isser of of Shvitzas Kelim according to Beit Shammai. Now that really is an amazing answer of the Gemara, that according to Beit Shammai, this is how it's going to be done. You can see Tosfos over here, the process of Hefker is not as simple as just simply saying, I disown it. It does involve three people. And you're going to have to do that every Erev Shabbos. Tosfos addresses that. But anyway, it just the idea, a concept that for Beit Shammai, because he subscribes to Shvitzas Kelim, the conclusions that it forces us to arrive at, so that's rather amazing. Again, all this now is Torah, but it's of course not Lamaisa. We don't pasken like Beit Shammai. We do in fact pasken like Beis Hillel. We don't subscribe to the concept of Shvitzas Kelim, and your Kelim can do it for Malacha for you over the course of Shabbos. There still is the consideration, meaning let's just go back and go over a really important point. There still is the current consideration of Avsha Milsa. And that means that if in fact it produces noise, so that's the degradation of Shabbos, then that obviously cannot be done. Okay, continuing in the Gemara, we are towards the top of the Amud. Mantan lahadatan rabban. Who's the author of the following brisa? Lo simalei isha kedera asasios v'tormesin v'tanich l'tocha tanor er Shabbos im chashecha v'im nasnan lemosei Shabbos asorim bechtei shiasu. So the first case of the brisa is that a woman cannot fill a pot right before Shabbos with some sort of beans, legumes, and put them in the oven right before Shabbos. And if she does so, says the Braisa, so not only are you not allowed to eat them on Shabbos, but you must wait till after Shabbos, the amount of time that it takes for them to cook, so that you gain no benefit from the malacha that was done over the course of Shabbos. Kayotze bo, second case of the Braisa, lo yimalei nachtam chavisha mayim, v'yanich l'socha tanur erev Shabbos im chashecha, v'im asa kein l'motzei Shabbos asurin b'chdei shiyasu. Another example, says the Braisa, is that the baker cannot put a barrel of water, let's call it a pot of water, and put it in the oven right before Shabbos, so that the cooking of water occurs over the course of Shabbos, and if that is done, you cannot drink that boiled water on Shabbos, and even after Shabbos, you have to wait the period of Bichdei Shiyasa, the amount of time that it takes to boil, so that way you're not benefiting at all from any malacha that was done on Shabbos. So lema b'shamei hi v'lo b'selam. So even though the brisa is anonymous, but being that we are now, we now have concluded correctly in terms of the shita b'shamei b'selam, it sounds like the author of this brisa is b'shamei and not that of b'selam. And the Gemara says no. Afilu tema b'selam. That really the author of this brisa is b'selam. Now it demands an explanation. According to b'selam, he does in fact not subscribe to the principle of shvitzas kelim. So why, according to Beis Hillel, can you not eat the beans or drink the water on Shabbos? You didn't do the malacha on Shabbos. You put them up right before Shabbos. And the only thing that did the malacha is the kelim. Beis Hillel doesn't subscribe to Shvitzas kelim. So why, according to Beis Hillel, would one not be allowed to drink it on Shabbos per se? And the Gemara now introduces us to a fundamental, important discussion, concept. Over here, we're talking about food. Now, as opposed to all the other cases where you just start it before Shabbos and you let the process continue on Shabbos, but in all the previous aforementioned cases, both in the Mishnah and on the Braisa and the Amud Aleph, we were not talking about food. But here, in fact, we're talking about food. And the difference being is that if the food is something that we plan on eating on Shabbos, so we are going to be extraordinarily tempted in that. Right now, if the food doesn't cook properly, we're not going to have good food on Shabbos, and so we're going to be tempted to manipulate the fire. And this is the idea of Shem Yechate B'Gachalim. This concept of Shem Yechate B'Gachalim will be driving a good part of the third parak of our Masechta, and the Gemara introduces us to this concept right over here. And that is why, according to Beis Hillel, even though Shvitzas Kelim would be mutter, but one would not allow to be put up a pot of food or water right before Shabbos, the Chachamim banned that activity because they were worried that we're going to stoke the coals over the course of Shabbos in order to make sure that the food is cooked. So the Gemara says, why don't the Chachamim extend their gzera to the cases of Mugmar, the deodorizing of your clothing, and Gafris, and the sulfur process over your utensils? So why don't they make the gzera over there? So the Gemara says that there's really no incentive to stoke the coals. In fact, stoking the coals in those cases would be counterproductive. Because if you stoke the coals over there, so it would come out that the clothing would not be deodorized, but rather smoky. And the same thing is true regarding the sulfur. And so therefore, you're not only, there's no incentive to do so, you're disincentivized to do so. Stoking the coals would be adversely affect the clothing and the utensils. Onishol pishta nami ligzor. The Gemara says, what about the flax? And putting it into the oven. Hasam kevin dekashlu zika lo megalelu. So the Gemara says, no. Because that, again, would be detrimental. If you were opening up the oven in order to stoke the coals, so that would introduce wind into it, and that would adversely affect the flax. So once again, the person would not be incentivized in doing so, and the Chacham therefore did not feel the need to make a gzera. Semer liyara ligzor, the Gemara says, what about wool? So the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel biyara akura. So the Gemara says, well, the pot over here was taken off before Shabbos. V'nech Hashem ha-megisba. So the Gemara says, okay, the pot was taken off, but if we allow the dyeing to occur over the course of Shabbos, and even though I removed it off the pot before Shabbos, but isn't there a concern that I may stir it? And stirring is also part of the malacha of Bishol, an idea which we're also going to see later in the Masechta, but the Gemara here speaks to it very clearly. Rashi says that the stirring is going to accelerate the cooking process. Acceleration of cooking on Shabbos is also a violation of the malacha of cooking. So the Gemara says, ba'akura v'tochech. So the Gemara says, well, the wool pot, the pot with wool in it that is being dyed, not only was it removed off the fire, but it was also sealed as well. And so therefore, there will be no temptation to go ahead and to open it up in order to stir it. V'hashadam ramar gzereshom yichata b'gachalim. So the Gemara says, okay. So now we just introduced ourselves to this idea of the Chachamim's concern of stoking the coals. So by which one is not allowed to put up food before Shabbos, right before Shabbos, in order so that it cook over the course of Shabbos because of this concern. But the Gemara says that built into this gzera is also going to be the following leniency. If let's say you took a raw piece of meat and put it into the pot immediately before Shabbos, so then that would negate the concern. Because the concern is that we plan on eating it tonight. And right now, it's mostly cooked, but it could use a little more cooking. And so therefore, the temptation is unbelievably strong that you're going to want to stoke the coals. But if you put a raw meat in right before Shabbos, you know you're not going to be eating that raw meat on Friday night. You know that basically, you're not going to be looking at that pot until tomorrow morning. And so with this heter of kedera chaisa, the raw meat now will negate the concern. And under those circumstances, the Chachamim allowed it. My time, and the Gemara spells this point out. Kevin de lochazi leorta, since it's not going to be ready by nighttime, asuche mesech daite minei, velo asu lechtui gachalim. Your mind now will basically be diverted from this pot. You won't think about it, knowing that you're not going to enjoy it until tomorrow morning. And so therefore, the concern of shemei chate begachalim no longer exists. Ubashel shaper dami. If the food is fully cooked, so then obviously there's no concern leaving it on the fire going into Shabbos. Basho v'lo basho, but if the food is partially cooked, aser. So then it would be prohibited because now you have this concern. Where the food is partially cooked going into Shabbos, now you have this concern of you might come to soak the coals. As far as the discussion of Michael ben Drusai, let us hold off on that discussion until we start the third perek. And when we start the third perek, we'll revisit this topic again, introducing ourselves to the topic, to the concept of Michael ben Drusai. Vishade be garma chaya shapidami. Now this partially cooked pot going into Shabbos, so even though there is now a gzera derabbanan, one's not allowed to do so, but what you can do, says the Gemara, is take a raw piece of meat, throw it into that pot right before Shabbos, and now good. Now you are enjoying the benefit, the heter of keder chaisa. V'hashadam ramar kolmida dekashalei zika lo migalalei. So the Gemara says now, we spoke about this idea that if opening the pot is going to be adversely affecting that which is inside, so the Chachamim were not concerned about Shem Yechad Begachalim. So the Gemara says, Hibisra Degaji, if that's true, so let's take a look at goat meat. Now, none of us are consumers of goat meat, but I'm just explaining what the Gemara's assumption is. The goat meat is very soft and wind would adversely affect it. So Hibisra Degaji of a Sharik. And not only that, but the pot is sealed. So you are disincentivized from opening the oven in order to stoke the coals for one of two reasons. One, the meat itself is goat meat, and it's very soft, and wind would adversely affect it. And number two, also it happens to be that there's a seal around it as well, a seal around the oven. So in those cases, Shapir, it would be okay. Meaning for these two reasons, one would in fact be allowed to put it up right before Shabbos, or let's even say that it was partially cooked, but it would be okay. Shapir Dami. Debarcha velo sharik aser. If, however, the meat is a tougher meat, and the pot is not sealed, the oven is not sealed, so then it would be forbidden, meaning because then you have the clear concern of Shem Yechata Begachalim. Degaja velo sharik, debarcha v'sharik. However, let's say it's not as clear cut. Let's say it's goat meat that's being cooked, but the oven is not sealed. Or let's say it is a tougher meat, but the oven is in fact sealed. So, under those circumstances, it's going to be a debate. Rav Ashi, Sharei, v'Rav Yirmiyah Midifti, Aser. A debate amongst the Amoraim whether it would be Aser or Mutter. If you have one variable that's going to prevent you from stoking the coals, is that going to be good enough? That's a debate. Now, according to Rav Ashi, who is Mekel, and he says that as long as you have one reminder, either the softness of the meat or that the fact that the oven is sealed, and he says under those circumstances it would be mutter, let's ask the following question. Who is the author of the following Mishnah? This Mishnah we're going to be seeing in tomorrow's daf. One is not allowed to roast meat, onions, or eggs unless it is fully roasted by Friday. Meaning that it has to be fully cooked, completely cooked by Friday. So Hasam Debarcha Velo Sharik, Hasam Debarcha Velo Sharik, and over there the meat is tough, and the oven's not sealed. Meaning what the Gemara is basically saying is that Rav Ashi could explain that Mishnah very easily. That over there you have no reminder. Meaning that we're talking about a tough meat, which requires more cooking, and we're talking about an oven that's not sealed. And that's why the Mishnah is telling us that the only way you can do so is only if it's fully cooked before Shabbos. Ikadami. Now, we're going to have this basic same discussion with a slight variation. Degaja, if it is this soft goat meat, bein sharik, bein lo sharik, whether the oven is sealed or not sealed, shapir dami. It's fine. Meaning, because the meat is so soft, opening up the oven would adversely affect it. So therefore, the chachamim were not concerned, and therefore there's no gzera derabanan. Debarcha nami v'sharik shapir dami. If it is a tougher meat and the oven is sealed, but because the oven is sealed, that's sufficient. In the second version, ki pligi debarcha v'lo sharik. However, if the meat is tough and the oven is not sealed, Rav Ashi shari v'Rav Yirmiyah midifta aser. Rav Ashi says it would be permitted. Rav Yirmiyah says it would be prohibited. Well, the Rav Ashi d'shari. Now, according to Rav Ashi, who says that's permitted, what are you going to do with the Mishnah? The Mishnah in Solom Basar Basel Beis Alakadesh Yitzolom in Bod Yom. The Mishnah says that the only way you could roast meat is only if it's completed before Shabbos has begun. Hasam Mibisra Agumre. Over there we're talking about where the meat is directly on the coals. Since the meat is directly on the coals, there literally is nothing reminding you that you can't stoke the coals. As opposed to if the meat is in the oven and the coals are in the oven. So in order for you now to stoke the coals on Shabbos, you have to A, open the oven, and then go ahead and stoke the coals. So according to Rav Ashi, that's enough of a reminder so that the Chachamim were not concerned that you're going to end up soaking the coals on Shabbos. Am Ravina Haikra Chaya Shapir Dami. Ravina is of the opinion that when you have the raw gourd, you can put it up right before Shabbos. Kevin de Kashile Zika, Kibisu de Gajidama. Because over there, opening the oven would allow wind to come in, adversely affecting it. And so therefore, you are disincentivized from opening the oven and soaking the coals. And so therefore, just like by the gajah, by the soft goat meat, the Chachamim were lenient and did not apply the principle of Shem Yechad Begachalim, the same thing is going to be true regarding the raw pumpkin as well. Okay, that sugya that we just went through is unbelievably important, has a lot of halacha l'maisa. Please, I beg, do not make any conclusions based on the Gemara that we learn. Our learning of the Gemara just gets us informed and educated. At least we are conversant in the various principles, but we certainly do not have enough information in order to render any kind of halachic conclusions, but at least we have the basics down. Let's quickly recap our morning, and we'll pick it up tomorrow. The mission we learned today had a very basic discussion, debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, about starting a process before Shabbos, even though that process, which involves a malacha, continues through Shabbos. In the first three cases of the Mishnah, Beis Shammai is Machmir, and Beis Hillel is Mekel, in those first three cases. The fourth case of the Mishnah discussed making a transaction with a non-Jew, and unless he's able to get home before Shabbos, Beis Shammai disallows it. He prohibits it. And Beis Hillel is Matir. We discussed that briefly. Tomorrow morning we start with that fourth case of the Mishnah. And finally, the fifth case of the Mishnah is giving leather to a non-Jewish tanner for him to work with it on Shabbos, or giving clothing to a non-Jewish launderer for him to clean it. Not that he do it on Shabbos, but you gave it to him right before Shabbos. And in those cases, Beis Hillel is Mekel, because you're not asking him to do the work on Shabbos itself. In other words, he can do it whenever he wants. Beis Hillel is Mekel. I briefly just brought up the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, the controversial opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, that you can have contract labor being done for you on Shabbos. But again, it is an extraordinarily controversial position. See the Tosfos for an extensive discussion on that topic. In the Mishnah, Rishim and Gamliel was Machmer, like Beis Shammai. And then the Mishnah also mentioned that you're allowed to put boards on the olive press and on the wine press. I did not, and I'm remiss about this, I did not really explain why both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel would allow that activity to be done right before Shabbos. I just read the Mishnah, but I didn't explain it. So tomorrow morning, Mirz Hashem, I just want to go back there and I'm going to explain a little bit better, because Rashi does take some time in the Mishnah to explain it, and I didn't do so this morning. The Gemara, the first half of today's Amud, first we discussed the Malach of Lisha. Is it just simply putting together the water and the flour, or does it require the action of kneading itself? Machlokas Atanayim, our Mishnah seems to side with the position of Rebbe, who says that it's just simply the putting together the water and the flour, even before you actually knead, you already violated the Malach of Lisha. Our Mishnah seems to follow that position. Then we spent the rest of our day talking about the machlokas of and the topic of Shvisas Kalim, this idea that your Kalim have to rest on Shabbos. So we saw a brisa on the Amud Aleph that went over numerous scenarios of, as long as you start the process before Shabbos, it can continue through Shabbos, with notable exception to the millstone, you cannot work the millstone on Shabbos. And we had a difficult time, the Gemara had a difficult time assigning authorship of that brisa. Our first approach is that the author of the brisa is Beis Hillel. The Gemara even entertained for a moment Rav Yosef's position, is that Beis Hillel subscribes to the idea of Shvisas Kalim in a modified format, only when it's biyadim, only when it's active, not passive. But the Gemara ends up concluding that no, there is a fundamental debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel whether or not we subscribe to the concept of Shvisas Kalim. Beis Hillel does not subscribe to Shvisas Kalim, and Beis Shammai does. And that is fundamental. Beis Hillel does not subscribe to it at all, making no distinction between active versus passive, and Beis Shammai fully subscribes to it, whether it's active or whether it's passive. And so therefore, in terms of the authorship of the Braitha, the Gemara concluded that it is in fact the opinion of Beis Shammai. What about the first four cases where there was allowances that were done? So the Gemara says that we have to say that there was no Kli that was involved in these actions. And that's why it's okay, because you just simply put the fire directly on the ground. Simple questions according to Beis Shammai. How do you put up a cholent pot before Shabbos? How do you light licht before Shabbos? Your kelim are doing malacha, and the Gemara's response is that according to Beis Shammai, what you have to say is that you're mafkir the kelim, you disown them going into Shabbos. And then for the rest of today's daf, we went over the concept of shema yechate begachalim, that despite the fact that Beis Hillel allows your kelim to work on Shabbos, but putting up food in a pot right before Shabbos is going to be rabbinically prohibited, having nothing to do with Shvisas Kalim, obviously. He doesn't subscribe to Shvisas Kalim, but predicated on the fact that the Chachamim were concerned that if the food is not fully cooked going into Shabbos, so we are going to be tempted to stoke the coals on Shabbos, and so therefore the Chachamim prohibited that activity of putting up the food immediately before Shabbos. We spoke about the heter of Keder Chaisa. If you take a raw meat and put it into the pot, knowing now that you're not going to be able to eat on Friday night, the Chachamim waived their concern of Shem Yechate B'Gachalim. And then the remainder of the daf talked about the various reminders and hekerim that would perhaps allow a person to put it up before Shabbos, because there's enough reminders telling me that I shouldn't be stoking the coals. So we talked about the softness of the meat. We talked about whether or not the oven was sealed. and various other factors that perhaps would allow a person to put up the food right before Shabbos.